Hey, welcome back to another exciting episode of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. I'm your host, Steve Mileto, and this is episode 59, where my guest is Mrs. Amanda Milliner, who is the 2015 Georgia Teacher of the Year. She is incredibly energetic and so informational and so inspiring that you're just going to want to go teach right now. Thanks for being here. Have an awesome, awesome day. Learn lots. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, Steve here with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and I'm today with the Georgia Teacher of the Year from 2015, Amanda Milliner. Say hi, Amanda.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
I appreciate you taking time, Amanda, and just a little background. Amanda is a teacher in Houston County Schools. She's an elementary teacher, and she's had a wonderful year this year where she's actually taken time off as she's been touring, and I can't wait to hear a little bit about this where she's not been in the classroom, so she could be the Teacher of the Year for the state of Georgia. In 2006, she was Miss Georgia and competed for Miss America, and she's been a fantastic teacher in the classroom. And I think that she's now going to the third grade. Is that correct? You're going to.
That's right.
She's going to be a third grade teacher this next year in the school where she works in Houston County Schools, Georgia. For the last, how many years you've been teaching? It was fourth grade, right?
Seven. Right.
7 years. So you're going from seventh grade to third, and
I'm sorry, 7 years of teaching. I taught fourth and fifth grade.
Gotcha. Okay. I said that wrong. Sorry about that. So for 7 years, I had this in my mind weird. So for 7 years, you taught fourth and fifth grade is what you said.
Yes.
Thank you. So thank you very much for being here. I want to start off with that just as a little bit to say that's got to be a little strange thinking about going after being out of the classroom for a year. You've had this great stuff going on. So can you talk about just a little bit what you were doing as Teacher of the Year for the year before we go into some of the other questions?
Yeah, so you spend the year traveling, presenting workshops, speeches. I really enjoyed working with the pre-service teachers in the colleges all around the state of Georgia. That was some of my favorite work because they're so enthusiastic and they're right there at the beginning deciding what type of teacher they want to be. And so me being able to be there to kind of help them discover the type of teacher they want to be was exciting. I also would spend time in schools, model teaching and co-teaching if necessary, and really enjoyed that. So I enjoyed my work. I got to meet President Obama twice,
wow,
which was really exciting. Got to go to DC for the first time ever, which is crazy that I've never been to DC as a military child, but I did miss teaching. So I would go to schools and I would literally find myself writing in notebooks, oh, I have to use this. Oh, this is such a good idea. And I would type my colleagues. I would say, hey, I found this while I was at a conference. You might want to use this. So I'm looking forward to going back in the classroom. I know I'll continue speaking. I've already been invited to do a couple things this year already. My principal said, you know, that sounds great. She's very supportive of this. But it'll be nice to go back to me what's normal, which is my regular Mrs. Milliner self. So that'll be nice.
Nice, nice. I'm sure you're excited about being able to be with your own kid, you know, your own kids in your own classroom for a while.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about something, because I'm gonna want you to talk about why you became a teacher. But something on your Teacher of the Year application, you mentioned that you see yourself as a role model for your kids. And I was wondering if you could kind of explain that to everybody.
Well, I think a lot of times our kids look at teachers and they think that we just magically appeared as an educator and our life is just great. And they think we live in mansions and Miss Milliner, have you ever met Justin Bieber? I'm like, what? No. So I always try to verbalize to my students that I'm definitely a self-made person. I know how important education is. My mother was a single parent until I was about 8 and married my stepfather. I didn't meet my biological father until I was 18. And I look nothing like my mom. She's blonde hair, blue eyes. I'm very dark. I'm Pacific Islander, so we look nothing alike. So a lot of my life, I thought I was adopted. Gotcha. And I made my mother force to prove to me that she was my mom, which is funny because she is my mother. But I like to be able to relate to my kids and say, listen, I came from a single parent home. I was the first generation college graduate, and I've continued to go to school, and I'm currently working on my doctorate. That's because I knew I wanted something better for myself. And I worked very hard. And sometimes some of my kids are going to have it a lot more difficult than I had it. But I try to tell them, you can't control all these other variables in your life. All you can control is what you decide to do. And I think when my kids see that I have this no excuses mentality, they're willing to work harder because they know I'm going to do everything I can to get them there. But you can't ask for handouts, and you got to be willing to put in the work. And so they do that.
That's excellent. That's, you know, that whole idea of, you know, look what I've done, look where I've come from, and look what I've done in my life. And so don't give me excuses. That's I like that a lot. You know, it's something that too often, you know, they see adults want to blame everything else instead of thinking about what effort they could put into it. And I love that story. So let's talk a little bit about why you became a teacher. So can you talk a little bit about that? What made you think about that?
I never wanted to be a teacher growing up. That was never something, a career aspiration. Not because I didn't want to. I just never thought about being a teacher. I actually wanted to be an astronaut, which is funny because I'm very claustrophobic and I hate heights.
So nice, nice.
That right. So I'm glad that didn't work out. But I was a volunteer in college for the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization. And when I would visit my little sister in the program every week, her teacher was amazing. And I remember just sitting there in awe. I would be so excited about visiting her because I'd want to see my student, but I also wanted to see what this teacher was going to do because I felt like she was always pulling tricks out of her hat, and she loved what she was doing. She would dress up. It was like being in this educational theme park, if you will.
Nice.
With great classroom management.
Yes.
And so I left thinking, is this what I'm supposed to do? So I prayed about it, and I quickly changed my major. And everything from there just seemed like butter. It was easy. It was hard work, but it just made sense.
I love the image that you just created of an educational theme park. Is awesome because it brings this idea of fun and engagement and, you know, wanting to be there. And, you know, it's...
Oh, my God. Yes. Well, I have one example. I remember one day she was teaching a lesson. We were reading a book about a girl that lived in Japan, and we had a full-out tea party, a Japanese tea ceremony. I mean,
wow.
I was in awe because I'm thinking, how could these kids not want to learn about this little girl in this story? Because we're sitting here like we're in Japan. It was so cool. And this was a Title I school. These babies came from all walks of life. And so there's no excuses that, you know, they weren't ready or they weren't engaged, because she did exactly what Eric Jensen says. And that there's no excuses. You have to engage them. You have to hook them. And she hooked me. So there we
nice.
Go. Here I am.
I love that. That is so awesome, because having that have hooked you into wanting to be a teacher is excellent. By the way, I love what you said about the idea that you wanted to be an astronaut and and you're claustrophobic and don't like heights. That's, you know, it's often, I had at an early age, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, and I never thought that I don't do well on roller coasters. You know, what a great thing. Put me in a plane so I can, you know, decorate it with my lunch or something.
Nice, nice. You and I are both grounded. Maybe high aspirations, but with aptitude tests, I eventually learned that was not my calling to be in space.
There you go. And see, with me, I chose the Army. Stay on the ground. You know.
There you go.
So tell me a little bit about, and I think I heard a little bit of that coming out. What is it that you really like about teaching? What just kind of gets you fired up?
You know, what's so great about teaching is I get to determine the type of environment I want to have. So if I'm excited, and we've kind of talked about this before, but I'm an orange. So when you look at True Colors personality test, typically oranges are very spontaneous. We're very active. We're adventurous. And so we like to do hands-on and movement. And I'm also very close green, yellow. I mean, green, gold, and blue. Well, no. Let me tell the truth. I'm very close green and yellow. Blue, I'm like way down. Okay? I'm not sensitive at all. So I have to work on that. But being an orange, teaching, you can facilitate whatever color you are. So if you're a blue, you can bring that in your profession. If you're a green, you can bring that in. And for me, being able to say, okay, let's do centers, let's do this. Why don't we create, instead of just learning about these adaptations, let's create some. Let's make ourselves become these animals. It's really fun because I love to learn, and being able to help kids love to learn is so exciting. So, and I am personally not someone that could just sit and work all day at a desk. That's what my husband does, and he loves it. It works for him. For me, I like to be up and at him and moving, and so teaching's perfect for that.
Nice. That makes me think of that. I like that picture that's on, I think it's the Facebook page, where you're running with the kids. I think that image just comes to mind. They're doing stuff and getting them to do. That's awesome. I like what you said though. You're orange with the gold and the green, but no blue. That's an interesting aspect.
I know. I'm being very transparent with the audience here. I've been working through it. I'm trying to be better because when I have students that are blue, I can't come at them with this orange. I need to soften it. And so what's great about the True Colors assessment is you're able to reflect on your own self. And you learn a lot more from what you aren't than what you are. And being that I'm not a blue, one of my colleagues I work with is all blue. I mean, she's basically blue to the T. And we finally learned, okay, now we get why there's a communication gap here. And so we've been able to work even more effectively, and we're like best friends, but we were really able to have an aha moment of, oh, I get it. So when I suggest something to you, you're thinking it's because you're inadequate. I'm thinking I'm being helpful. So we've been able to work that out. So it's hilarious what you're able to do when you self-assess.
That's awesome. I really like what you're talking about there. Learning more from what you aren't than what you are. That's right. A great thing to think about. Let's talk a little bit about your ideal classroom. And if money wasn't an issue, what would that ideal classroom look like for you?
Oh man, it's so hard to put out there because we never get that option, but I would say the first, I would love every child to have their own laptop and printer. I'd want like a one-to-one, but I would want them to probably have a Mac. And I don't want to put that out there, but I have a Mac right now. And so I'd love them to have the capability of graphics so they could really create, and then have their own color printer where they could just be making things. And then also they could be tapping into a kids blog and different websites where they could really foster they're learning. But each child, I would want to have at least, if I had 20 students, I'd want to have at least 4 to 5 adults in there, maybe 2 full-time teachers and 3 teacher supports or just other staff, because I really want these students, when they're working, to get that one-on-one instruction. If they're trying to do kids blog and they have a problem, the teacher could come over and say, hey, have you thought about it doing this way? Because when you think about differentiating, it all sounds great on paper, and it is great, but it's almost impossible for a teacher to do it for every subject in elementary school, where we teach 6 subjects for 20 to 25 students. So when you bring in more bodies, it's a lot more feasible for me to differentiate to a different level. And then I would love to have just my whole room would be just swarming with books. I'd have forts where you could read. I would have science centers. And if you wanted to do project-based learning, I would be able to just give you everything. So talking about me being an astronaut, I would really be able to give the students the tools they wanted to become that. And if you wanted to be a fighter pilot, then you would be able to really be able to research it. Maybe I'd be able to tap into someone that is a fighter pilot. And we would have field trips all the time. Every month we would have field trips. They were all expense paid. And we would even be flying places. I mean, we wouldn't just learn about, World War II. We would fly out to Auschwitz and see it if it was age appropriate. So, you know, just really becoming the learning and not just doing it, which we do with online learning. We are able to do that a lot more. But there's something about being there and smelling it and feeling it.
Well, there really is. That's, you can only make, the window of the mind, if you will, really think right. about things so much unless they actually get to see it and be there. I mean, as you know, if you're gonna talk about a snake, the real impact is when they get to hold the snake or they get to touch the alligator or something like that, or actually see where they live and and that type of environment, as opposed to looking at them and crawling around on a virtual tour or something like that. So
I like one thing I think about, like, just when you think about fourth grade, you learn about weather, we learn okay. about snow, we learn about the solid liquid gas, and how cool would it be for us to go and take a skiing trip and really see what's, because you know, it's like once every 5 years we get snow in middle Georgia.
Right,
it's like, you know, no skiing. Shut down the world. So it's maybe once every 5 or 10 years. So to actually go there and let them see it and talk about the process of how nice. Snow comes down and what's the difference between sleet and snow. And seeing it
yes.
is so different for our kids. They would never forget it. They would live it and know it. And it's so hard for them. Like you said, it's abstract. Like sleep. Oh, I guess it's when they don't even know. They have no idea. They're stuck in the house when it snows.
Right.
If it ever does.
That's awesome, because that really then makes them get a feel for it. Because there's nothing like I had a roommate in college who had never seen an ocean. I grew up in Daytona Beach. And
oh, wow.
And he had never seen an ocean. He was from Montana, and I'll never forget on a band trip. We were in this band together, and we went to San Diego, and all he wanted to do was go to the ocean. And that was the coolest thing, because here's this 19-year-old who's never seen an ocean, who's out there like, I mean, just I mean, he was like a 3-year-old out there just bopping around in that water. And you know, and that's it's that experiential thing that just really right. impacts. And that's awesome. I love that. I love that ideal classroom you got going there. With that, let's talk a little bit, because I've heard you mention some of the technology that you'd like to have. Do you have a favorite app or aspect of technology that you like to try and tap into? Is there something that you would love to bring into that classroom this year with the third graders?
I definitely want to bring kids' blog into my classroom this year. I want my students to be able to see why we write, why do we do the work we're doing. It's not necessarily because you're going to, you know, we don't learn about animals so that you become a veterinarian or see animals. We learn about it for much more than that.
Yes.
And we want to be able to share our learning and our research and our capacity to critically think with others. And so I want to use kids' blog. I also want to use iMovie. And I didn't talk about it before, but iMovie is an app from the iPads where these students can create like book trailers. And I'm taking this idea from a colleague that works in Savannah Chatham area. I think it was Savannah Chatham, but she showed some really cool book trailers that her students made. And so what we're doing there is we're having the students first, of course, read.
Right.
Holding them accountable to that reading, but then also helping them to encourage others through these book trailers how good these books are. And that's something else I would definitely want to work on this year.
Excellent. I love that. That would be cool. I even have thoughts about what that would be like, where they read the book and then they create their little movie about as an advertisement for, you know,
right.
Go read this. And
yes.
Very cool.
And maybe we'll show them throughout the day, like commercial breaks.
Yeah.
You know, have a little day, the moments where you just have a commercial break and someone's featured and put the book on display. Just cool things.
That is neat stuff. I like that. That would be very cool, because then you start encouraging other kids to take a look at that book too. So it becomes more than them just telling you about doing a report or something like that. It also becomes an advertisement to the rest of the school or kids to take a look at that that book. Nice.
Yeah.
I've gotten a chance to hear you talk at a couple of events this past year. And what I want to get you to talk about now is, if you were talking to an audience of 100 teachers and they're brand new, they've not actually stepped into that classroom yet, what advice would you give them for starting off right?
Well, I've had the opportunity to do that a lot this year. And I really did take some time to think, what did I need to know? What would have helped me when I started? The first thing I would tell them is, you're not going to be able to do everything in the first year. So it all sounds great. And I still struggle with this now. I'll find all these ideas and I want to do them all. And then I end up doing a lot of them subpar when I could have chosen to really do well. And I would suggest to them, choose what you really want to do. If you want to do journals with your students where you write back to them like every couple of days, do that. Be consistent and keep it throughout the year so that the kids really have that consistent communication and relationship. If you want to do where you have a really cool website, well, then do it and do it well. Let's not just do it and fall off and forget, because that's what I do. I know I'm speaking for myself here. I have great ideas and I stop. I would also tell them to align themselves with positive educators that are willing to share ideas and help them become better. Unfortunately, in every profession, you're gonna have competition. And sometimes people see young people as a threat, thinking, oh gosh, here they come, they're gonna make me look bad. But most of the time, teachers see them as an opportunity to help them and to learn, because we can learn a lot from new teachers coming in. So find those teachers that can be mentors for you, because every school is different and every grade is different. So what you may have done student teaching at one school may not necessarily work for the school you're going to. And so you have to find out what these veterans already are doing, and it'll save you a lot of stress. They've already tried to do a website and maybe it just didn't work out. Maybe don't focus on that your first year. Maybe focus on the content more, you know, just examples. So I would say that you've learned a lot from people that have been doing this. And I have definitely been very successful because of these mentors in my life that still help guide me. People think, oh, you're teacher of the year, you must know everything. I'm like, oh my gosh, no. I call them constantly. I'm constantly calling them. When I have to fill applications, I'm like, please read this. Tell me what you think. Collaboration is key. Nothing happens in a vacuum with education. We have to work together. So that's what I would tell them.
That's awesome advice. And just as a note, the last part that you just talked about, that having to work together, because too often, especially, you know, my experience was almost entirely in high school, and as high school teachers really can get involved in just closing the door and
right,
blocking themselves off, and encouraging them to work with each other is such amazing advice, because that is you learn from each other, and not only that, the kids get to see you working together, which inspires them in other ways. So good stuff.
It models like for them how we should be.
Yeah, exactly.
We're trying to teach students to be collaborative thinkers, and yet we don't do that sometimes.
Right. That's kind of strange, isn't it? We want you to be collaborative, but we don't collaborate. So
yeah, right.
Nice.
Do as I say, not as I do.
There you go.
That doesn't work with kids anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. They pick up on that right away. So let's take a look at this. Let's look at the same scenario, except this time you have an audience of principals. What advice would you give principals? 100 principals.
Well, my principal is wonderful, so she needs no advice. I hope she's listening. No, I think the first piece of advice is really fostering those relationships. Relationships are key. Teachers are we're interesting creatures, and we need support. We need to be able to be listened to. We need to know that we are, we're just like students, but bigger, because we're all really just kids if you think about it. But we need to know that we're valued. So I think first and foremost, principals have to establish that relationship. They have to model, once again, for the staff, the type of communication that needs to be taking place throughout colleagues and throughout the classroom, I mean. So they need to model that first and foremost with integrity and just professionalism. Second would be really find out what your teachers do well so that you can tap into those skills so that they can help spread that amongst the other teachers. So if you have a teacher that's very good with technology, use her or him so that they can model and mentor to other teachers. I think there's this new idea while I've been traveling, there's this new whole agenda of teacher leaders. We know the Department of Defense, but there's this whole new initiative of teacher leaders, and the idea is to share the load. Principals are inundated with paperwork and demands and all kinds of things. I don't know how they do it all and still go home and have some time with their families. So the idea of spreading some of that responsibility with the teachers would help them, but also help the teachers feel more included and to feel like they have a voice and that they're valued. So I think there's a combination of relationships and shared leadership.
I think that's excellent advice, because sometimes get can get caught up in the administrivia of what's going on in the workplace that you forget that you need to connect with the teachers. You need to, I love what you're talking about with showing them that they're valued, because that sometimes you can get into the workday so much that you even forget to smile in the hallway as you pass somebody. And it's that good stuff. I like that. So, you know, one of the things that I'd like you to get to talk about is, before we close, is if in your past you had a teacher that you would thank and because they made an impact on you, you know, who would that be and what would you say to them?
Oh, there's too many. There's too many. But if I had to narrow it, I guess I would start through my profession. So the first teacher would be the teacher in fifth grade. And I didn't know then that I was being taught how to be a great teacher. You don't realize that. It's like what Steve Jobs says, when you're doing life, nothing really makes sense. But when you look back, the dots start connecting.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, I get it. So I had a great fifth grade teacher, Marcy Wall, who taught me PE, but also taught me so much more than physical education. I mean, she taught me how to work with others. She taught me how to just be a good person and to be athletic. So I enjoyed her. And she was my first teacher I had in Georgia, because I moved around a lot as a child, military life. And so when I came to Georgia, it was an interesting transition. And she was one of the people that really helped give me some foundation. It was very common for my mother to be gone for 3 to 4 months every year.
Wow.
Overseas. She worked for mobility. And, you know, imagine a child in a blended family. My father and I didn't get along right away. Well, imagine that, right?
Right.
So a blended family, we didn't get along right away because I thought, yeah, I knew everything, all of, you know, 9 years old. And he had a very hard childhood. So he didn't quite... he learned through our life what quote unquote normal childhood is, if you
gotcha.
Will. I had a hard, abusive life. So it was transitioning into Georgia, and my mother was gone at the time, and just that fifth grade teacher really took care of me. It's amazing what teachers do. In high school, I had a teacher who taught me English and also was my yearbook advisor, Vicki Allen. They're all still friends of mine.
Neat.
And both actually went to Miss America. When I competed for Miss America, they flew up to Vegas.
Wow.
You know, it's amazing what teachers do.
Yes.
And then last, I would say the teacher that we talked about earlier, her name is Julie Hyers from Valdosta. And she's the reason I became a teacher. So all of these people are still in my life. All of them went to my wedding. All of them went to Vegas when I competed for Miss America. And we all continually talk. None of them know each other really. But these are all huge impacts in my life. I always say when I speak, I try to mention when I'm talking to just the general audience, you know, think about three people that really influenced your life. Other than family members, I can pretty much guarantee at least one of them will be an educator.
Nice.
Part of that's because of the probability of how much time we spend with students.
Right.
But it's also because teachers do not stop teaching when the clock hits 3, 4, or 5. They're always teaching. They're always part of your life. And that is what great teachers do. And these great teachers have still been with me. Oh, and I have to mention one more person.
Okay.
Because I know she's going to listen. Dr. Tanya Swaggart. Let me tell you, if you don't know Dr. Tanya Swaggart from Warner Robins, Georgia, you need to know her, because she is a force to be reckoned with. She's an educator, EIP math, and now she's an instructional coach. Amazing.
Nice.
The idea of data-driven instruction, the idea of collaborative learning, just she's the reason that I am now doing what I'm doing, because Dr. Swaggart, that's the one. Everyone in their school needs to find a Dr. Swaggart. These new teachers, they need to walk around and say, okay, who is my Swaggart? Because she is why I'm doing so well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's sad that some people may go into our career field and not make connections like that, and or not realize that the impact that somebody had on their life for them to make those choices. And they're usually there, like you said. If you stop and think about it, there is a reason why you chose what you chose. And that's cool. Those people that you've mentioned that are still having that impact on you.
Oh yeah.
Well, Amanda, I can't thank you enough for joining me today, and I'm looking forward to hearing about some great things going on in third grade. And what I'd like to do is, if anyone in the audience would like to connect with you, is there a way that they can? And if you could share that with them.
My Twitter account is probably the easiest.
Okay.
And that's, my handle is GATOTY for Georgia Teacher of the Year 2015.
Okay.
So it's GATOTY 2015.
Excellent. If you're interested in asking Amanda a question or two, check her out on Twitter. And Amanda, can't thank you enough. Have an awesome year, and enjoy this summer as you're getting ready for the kids to arrive in the not too far down the road here, and keep doing all the great things that you're doing for kids. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Take care now.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.